Well, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will visit us this week, the first official visit to our shores by a sitting Israeli Prime Minister. Netanyahu's visit, which includes events with the local Jewish community, follows a significant shift in the ever-so-complicated roadmap for a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. After talks this past week with Netanyahu, President Trump talked tough on the threat to Israel from Iran, made vows of close friendship, and criticised the Obama-era policies towards Israel. Significantly, Trump dropped the US insistence on a two-state solution to the conflict, the vision of independent Israeli and Palestine states existing side by side, and noted Israel's expansion of settlements. Just suggesting they might sort of stop for a little while. Meanwhile, Netanyahu also outlined his two prerequisites for peace.
Recognition of the Jewish state and Israel's security needs west of the Jordan, they remain pertinent. We have to look for new ways, new ideas on how to reinstate them and how to move peace forward. And I believe that the great opportunity for peace comes from a regional approach, from involving our newfound Arab partners in the pursuit of a broader peace and peace with the Palestinians.
So what might the future hold, given that sort of ambiguity there in Mr. Netanyahu's statements? Two perspectives this morning, one from Israel, one from Australia. Ehud Yari is an Israel-based international fellow of the Washington Institute. He's an author and a Middle East commentator for Israel's Channel 2 television and well-known to Radio National listeners. Good morning, Ehud.
Hi, how are you?
And Robin Margot is joining us as well. He's a Sydney-based lawyer and editor-in-chief of the Jewish website Plus61J. Welcome to you, Robin Margot.
Hi.
Ehud, how strongly would you characterise this possible shift in approach from the US, given that the US ambassador to the United Nations and the State Department subsequently in effect repudiated it and said the two-state solution remains the U.S. policy?
Yes, I think it would have been extremely dangerous if there was such a shift taking place in American policy. I believe that President Trump was not really aware of the significance of the nuance that he has introduced into the decades-old American approach to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. This has been corrected by now, even by his designated new ambassador to Israel, Mr. David Friedman, in his hearing at the Congress, where in spite of different statements that he used to make before, he was saying that the two-state solution is the road to take. The main danger is that once the American president adopts a policy of approving of a one-state objective, that gives a lot of momentum to many, many Palestinians who are not interested in the first place in a peace deal with Israel and having a mini-state, a statelet, a Palestinian state. So I think this has been sort of fixed now, but the damage has been done.
What do you mean?
I mean that it's understood now that there is no change in the American policy, that Mr. Trump was not very accurate in the way he defined the American policy, including concerning the settlement activity in the West Bank. And things are being put straight. I'll give you an example. Trump said to Mr. Netanyahu, well, you have to hold a beat on settlement activity in the West Bank. But later on, with further conversations that Bibi had in Washington, he is already reconsidering the plan to resettle the inhabitants of a settlement by the name of Amona that has been dismantled by the Israeli police just a fortnight ago. So what we see is that there is no real change. I think what has happened is that we have seen a reset of Israeli-U.S. relationship, but so far, not much of a new policy.
And now, Robin Margo, to say that that's clear is to sort of give mud a good name, if I can put it like that. How do you think the Australian Jewish community, which in itself is not a monolith, of course, how do you think it's reading this ahead of this very important visit?
Well, it's always been policy of all representative bodies in, I should explain, I'm not entitled in, I'm a former president of the Board of Deputies, but I have no, I can't speak for the community now, but it's always been policy to support a two-state solution, and that's two states for two peoples. What the Jewish people are entitled to, the Palestinian people are entitled to under a two-state solution. So I hope very much Netanyahu is captive in many ways to his right-wing coalition. He has to watch his back all the time. People say that Israeli foreign policy is always domestic policy. When he was in the United Kingdom to meet Theresa May, he refused to confirm support for a two-state solution. What Trump said can be interpreted different ways, as everything Trump says, and he might change his mind the next day. But the look is, I agree entirely with Ehud, who knows, he's been following this much longer than I have, but it's a terribly bad look, and it doesn't help trust. Eight ministers of the coalition government at a conference in Jerusalem supported annexation recently in one way or another. And then came the Trump meeting, and then there was the support by Netanyahu and his Likud party in the coalition for the law retrospectively allowing Israel to expropriate private Palestinian land or claimed private Palestinian land in the West Bank, which is crossing a line. Erwin Kotler, who is a great friend of Israel, has a long history of support for Israel, describes this law as indefensible.
He's the Canadian man, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's an international law expert as well.
And I have heard that even a lot of Israelis said, well, look, the Supreme Court will knock that down.
Well, the problem is that everybody hopes that, and perhaps Netanyahu himself hopes that, but within his coalition, ministers have this week been attacking the claimed right of the Supreme Court to judicial review. And they're proposing a law in the Knesset, I don't know what will happen to it, a lot of these laws don't get passed, they just get proposed, to take away, to assert the Knesset's right to overrule the Supreme Court. All of this adds to the appearance of a right-wing push and of Netanyahu being beholden to the right wing, and it's a terribly bad look, I agree entirely with Ehud.
So it's a shift in the tone and the politics. And I mean, Ehud, you're particularly known for your contacts with the region. That statement by Netanyahu that there was opportunity to work with newfound Arab partners to make this sort of potential regional fix, whatever that means, what do you think he means, and can you sense any approval for that type of new approach?
Well, a lot is happening along these lines. That is, Israel now have very, very close relationship, mostly under the table, with quite a few Arab states, including those that do not have a peace treaty with Israel, like Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, etc., to the point that the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, last night accused Israel of helping the Saudis actively in the war that they are waging in the Yemen.
Goodness.
So what we see is...
It's pretty remarkable.
Well, funny things are happening in the Middle East these days. But what we see is that the Arab states are not willing to allow anymore the Palestinians to have a veto power over whatever relations they would like to forge with Israel. And if you read the Saudi press, for example, they are saying to the Palestinians, the relations that we are now developing with Israel will at the end contribute to your cause as well. However, having said that, I have to emphasize that I do not believe that the regional approach suggested by President Trump and Mr. Netanyahu can replace bilateral negotiations and understandings between Israelis and Palestinians, because none of the Arab rulers feel confident enough to go over the head of the Palestinians or try to impose some sort of a deal are the Palestinians.
Yes, so I must say there was that statement, I honestly thought was just breathtaking from Trump. I am looking at two states or one state, and I like the one that both parties like, as if that hasn't been tried for the last 40 years. I mean, Robin Margot, how do you think the Australian Jewish communities hear that?
Well, as I say, the policy is two states. And on the, if I may just address the idea of a regional initiative, the Arab states, including the Sunni states who share a fear of Iran and Iran's ascendancy, have made it very clear that they back the Arab Peace Initiative, which was originally a Saudi initiative from 2002, and that's a two-state solution with all sorts of compromises they've introduced since about return of refugees and the like. So I agree with Ehud. I don't see any regional arrangement being reached that doesn't in some way accommodate a two-state solution that just abandons the Palestinians.
I noticed that Akiva Elder, whom we've had on the program, who used to work for Haaretz, is now writing in Al Monitor, reflecting, I think, the incredibly vivid politics in Israel around this, Ehud, which I'd like to ask you about. Before his very eyes, this is Netanyahu, the demographics are making Israel, the occupier, less Jewish, and political reality is making Israel less democratic. I mean, can you sketch for us the level of fear feeling in Israel around these the sorts of sentiments we're describing, and just what Trump's intervention does to that, to the internal Israeli politics?
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Eldar, I disagree with whatever you've quoted for him. I don't think that the demographics in Israel are changing, because I don't think you're going to see an occupation, an annexation, although we have now a very, very painful situation in which the prime minister has become a hostage to his coalition partner, and they are trying to push him towards the right. I don't believe there will be any annexation moves, and I'm confident that the Supreme Court, for example, will rule out, will simply throw out of the door the new law that was mentioned before. Demography is not changing in Israel. In Israel, because much of the population realizes that the Palestinian leadership is not willing to be a serious partner to a deal and may introduce the necessary concessions and compromise.
Which Trump did hint at, talking about them as unwilling partners.
Yeah, so the people lost hope that peace is around the corner, and there is this drift to the right. But you still have a very solid 70 to 80% majority in every poll of Israel, or Israelis saying we want the two-state solution. The other thing is that Israel is not becoming less democratic. If anything, it's becoming even a more vigorous democracy. See what happens to the prime minister. I'm very happy. It's about time he goes to Australia. But the prime minister is being interrogated by the police. His wife is under investigation. The media here is full of stories about their lifestyle and friends, etc. I don't know that it's going to take the form of a criminal indictment, but it certainly looks very bad, and it doesn't add much to his aura. I would conclude by saying that I think that Bibi is coming to Australia, and it is the twilight of his period. It will take no more than a year, and we will have another prime minister.
Okay, well, there's a prophecy. I might come finally to Australia, Robin. Senior leaders of the ALP, including our former much Israel lover, Prime Minister Bob Hawke, and backed up by Foreign Minister Gareth Evans, are calling now for Australia to join 137 other countries to grant diplomatic recognition to Palestine, which is a really major break for Bob Hawke especially. How much is that sort of sentiment going to change the atmosphere ahead of this quite historic visit, in your view?
Well, this This issue has been raising its head in Australia. It's also been raising its head with the Democratic Party in America. Israel's conduct, it's professing support for two-state solution, but what it actually being done with announcement of settlement expansion and the like, and is alienating Israel's friends. Forget about Israel's enemies. They will never love Israel. But the people like Germany have cancelled meetings with Israel that were lined up. The EU, the UN Secretary General, the ALP here, it's Gareth Evans and Bob Hawke. Herb Evett actually had a major role in drafting the partition.
H.V. Evett, that was the former...
Yeah, 1947, yes. Which gave birth to the Jewish state, to lose the ALP. And they all say, all of these people, and I think you said, Geraldine, that they are friends of Israel. I hope very much that local Australian Jewish leaders will raise these questions with the Prime Minister if they get a chance. It's a very historic visit. Everybody's looking forward to it, and he's speaking in Sydney on Wednesday night. I hope he will address some of these questions. The other one, if I may just mention, is I find it very embarrassing the way he defended Trump. I don't know whether Mr. Trump is an anti-Semite or not. I don't form a view on that.
Well, he says there's nobody less anti-Semitic than him.
But, well, he has certainly encouraged anti-Semitism. He's encouraged the alt-right. He did not mention the Jewish people or the victims of the Holocaust in his statement on International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And the Prime Minister of Israel has said nothing publicly to criticize him for that. I found it embarrassing that he would say what he said about Trump on this occasion without challenging him in any way. And I'm sure that Australians, who include a very high proportion of Holocaust survivors and their descendants, will be feeling uncomfortable about that too.
We'll see. Robin Margo, thank you very much to you, and Ehud Yari, thank you for joining us from Israel.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Robin is the editor-in-chief of the Australian Jewish website Plus61J, which you might like to seek out. And Ehud Yari is a political commentator and journalist with Channel 2. In Israel, your thoughts most welcome, but I do think it'll be a very interesting week.